The Writer Files, a member of the Podglomerate Network.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
The people I know who are going to be writers are the ones who come up to me and say, Mr. Deaver, I've got a terrible problem. I'm not getting the kids to soccer practice on time. I'm showing up for work late. I'm skipping classes because I want to write. And those are the ones who are going to be writers because that kind of lifestyle suits them. And it certainly suits me. And that's something you're kind of born with. You know, not to say there aren't very gregarious authors who produce wonderful, wonderful books, have full family lives and social lives, but there are a number of us who live for the writing, and the way that the writing works best is solitary confinement. That's simply the way the game works.
Welcome back to The Writer Files. This is your grateful host, Kelton Reed, wishing you pages, patience, and perseverance per usual. Number one international best-selling author of more than 40 novels, Jeffrey Deaver, returns to rap about his prolific output, an award-winning handbook for mystery writers, and the latest Coulter Shaw novel, Hunting Time. Jeffrey's a former journalist, musician, and attorney, best known for his Lincoln Rhyme series, now a hit NBC TV show, and the novel The Bone Collector, adapted for the big screen starring Denzel Washington and Angelina Jolie. The Master of Suspense has been nominated for 8 Edgar Awards and served 2 terms as president of the Mystery Writers of America, and was recently named a Grand Master of MWA, whose ranks include Agatha Christie, Mary Higgins Clark, and Walter Mosley. His latest is Hunting Time, a Coulter Shaw novel, described as a riveting thriller as reward seeker Coulter Shaw plunges into the woods and races the clock in a case where nothing is quite what it seems. Kirkus Reviews described the book as a fleet, irresistible tale. Jeffrey has sold over 50 million books worldwide in 150 countries and have been translated into 35 languages. He's also published 3 collections of short stories. In this file, Jeff and I discussed pandemic survival, how he finds the solitude of the writing life, what it's like to be mentioned in the same breath as Agatha Christie, how he keeps his Edgar Award nomination streak alive, why books are better than Netflix, how the author structures his novels with questions and conflicts, and a lot more. Stay calm and write on. And don't forget, you can always support this show by heading to writerfiles.fm, where you can also sign up for email updates, get links to merch, and other resources for writers. And if you're a fan of The Writer Files, please click follow to automatically see new interviews in your podcatcher as soon as they're published, and drop us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you tune in to help other writers find us. Okay, we are back on The Writer Files, and I am honored today to have a returning guest. I've got New York Times bestselling author Jeffrey Deaver is back on the pod. Thank you so much. I can't wait to catch up.
Oh, so good to talk to you again, Kelton. Enjoyed it last time. I'm sure we'll have a lot of fun today as well.
Absolutely. So I will drop a link to our original conversation, How to Write Commercial Fiction with Jeffrey Deaver. And, you know, we had talked essentially about why suspense writers are like airline pilots, which I thought was an apt analogy, and, you know, wisdom from Joyce Carol Oates talking about the importance of outlining, which you're a huge proponent of, reading your novel out loud to improve your prose, and of course your kind of wisdom and formula for writing what we call roller coaster fiction, or as you've been called, the master of ticking bomb suspense, by People Magazine. But yeah, I can't wait to talk about what you have been up to since our last talk, because we were in the middle, or at least the beginning of the pandemic, and everyone was kind of freaked out, but it was definitely like a big change for everybody. And the last time we talked, you had 27 cans of tuna on your shelf. So did you make it through the tuna?
Well, you know, Kel, it's very funny you should say that, because I've decided, I mean, my attitude now is we certainly have to respect what a, you know, nightmare situation we've been through. And, you know, we're not completely out of the woods yet by any means. I myself have had 5 shots. I've had COVID, not anything serious, although the worst symptom was the brain fog, which you may have heard of. But I finally decided it's time to start emptying out my 3 freezers, where I was ready for the apocalypse. And yes, I had the tuna. And in fact, yesterday I just checked the expiration date and I was good to go on them, and made tuna salad for dinner yesterday, tuna salad for breakfast this morning. Lunch will not be tuna salad because I'm getting a little tired of it at this point. But and then in roaming some of the shelves, I figured if something, you know, it probably, if the expiration date is probably like January 2021, I gave it a pass and out it went. But aside from that, I still have a bunch of food left. I'm working my way through.
Okay. Well, I'm glad to hear that you still have a taste for tuna after all things being said. But yeah, I can't wait to talk about, of course, your latest, Hunting Time, and, you know, how that writing process, you know, because I think last time we talked, you were really emphasizing the importance of sticking to a schedule, and you're a writer who is a huge proponent of deadlines. So it sounded like to me, like, and you know, other writers have contradicted this, but you know, it sounded like you were not having any problem with your prolific output as a result of the wider changes that were happening in our society.
Sure. Well, for one thing, when I quit practicing law in the late, late 1980s, some time ago, and began writing fiction full time, my big concern, and I'd already written and published about six, seven books at that point, so I know I could write the books, but would I be able to survive the solitude that came with that kind of lifestyle? Because I was working for a law firm and then later for a legal publishing company. And that's, you've got the water cooler, you've got lunch with your friends, you've got clients that you take out, you've got business trips, sometimes to exotic locations, sometimes not, but you get out, you do things. And I thought, well, how will I be able to handle the solitude? And it took me, I am not making this up, I think 6 hours to realize that I was made for this kind of solitary life. I had never been happier. I missed friends, of course, but just because you work for yourself doesn't mean you cannot see your friends from time to time. So I certainly made an effort to do that. But so since like 1989, my life has been my sitting in I was going to say dark room. It doesn't need to be a dark room, but sitting in a room by myself, maybe dogs there, maybe not, writing, working on my books. And it suits me. When I teach my courses in writing, I have students of all ages who come up to me. And these are not academic courses. These are practical courses, kind of what we talked about last time in writing commercial fiction. And I'll have a very common thread is that, you know, Mr. Deaver, I want to write. I love books. I want to write. I just can't find the time. And I'm encouraging, certainly, you know, and I say, yeah, well, you don't have to write the whole book. Sit down and finish it in a week, a month, or even a year. Take your time. You know, sometimes it takes years to finish a book, and that book could be, Man Booker winner in England or a National Book Award winner here. But in the back of my mind, I'm thinking these people probably will not be full-time writers. They may indeed publish a book or two, but I have a feeling they very likely may not. I'm still, as I say, I'm very encouraging. The people I know who are going to be writers are the ones who come up to me and say, Mr. Deaver, I've got a terrible problem. I'm not getting the kids to soccer practice on time. I'm showing up for work late. I'm skipping classes because I want to write. And those are the ones who are going to be writers because that kind of lifestyle suits them. And it certainly suits me. And that's something you're kind of born with. You know, not to say there aren't very gregarious authors who produce wonderful, wonderful books, have full family lives and social lives. But there are a number of us who live for the writing. And the way that the writing works best is solitary confinement. That's simply the way the game works. And so the pandemic time was not a lot different for me. I was now as an author, my typical life of an author is work 6 days a week. Seventh day, I have maybe a dinner party or go out to see friends. And during the week, of course, I'll see friends as well. But during the pandemic, I missed that. Of course, who wouldn't? But it gave me a chance to get a little bit more done than I normally would have.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
As an author, obviously, you've had a prolific output, I believe, more than 40 novels now, jotting and writing and publishing short stories and nonfiction at times. And I think, honestly, since last we talked, I hadn't realized that you had been the president of the Mystery Writers of America, mm-hmm. and that you had recently been named, actually, the Grand Master of MWA, which includes some pretty storied writers there, including Agatha Christie, Mary Higgins Clark, and Walter Mosley.
Indeed.
But yeah, talk a little bit about that organization, that honor, and then also, we could delve into a little bit about the How to Write a Mystery handbook that you contributed to,
sure.
And I believe it seems like a pretty important handbook.
Oh, yeah, it was
in and of itself
very well received. I think it was. Kind of lose track of this is not a very humble thing to say, but I've been doing this for a long time. And, you know, again, it's about 45 novels at this point, 90 short stories, some nonfiction stuff. And just by virtue of the volume, you're going to get recognized from time to time. And I've gotten, a fair number of awards, but some awards I haven't won, like the McCavity, the Anthony, and Mystery Handbook up for an award, not paying much attention to it. And suddenly it started winning awards. And for instance, it did win an Anthony, and I think it got a McCavity and another award as well. And suddenly I can add that on, but then I have to add in parentheses, like I got 1/80th of the award because it was a number of us. I should actually put it, instead of parentheses, I'll put a little asterisk because nobody reads the footnotes anyway. But we can certainly talk about the handbook. But about MWA, I mean, I was just absolutely delighted some years ago to be asked to be president of the Mystery Writers of America, one of the preeminent writers groups in the country. It does many, many things. Education, of course. It has the famous awards, the Edgar Awards, and a number of other awards honoring not only writers, but booksellers and publishers and people involved in the publishing world, and television as well. Any mystery writing kind of phenomenon MWA is a part of. And I was I've been a member for a long time, and you probably know that the MWA offers the Edgar Award, really one of the most prestigious awards in the world. Now I will say right off the bat, I have been nominated for 8 Edgars. Delighted by that. You know, the soap opera character, Susan Lucci, who was nominated for I don't know how many daytime soap opera Emmys, but but never won. I think finally she did win. And so I've been nominated for eight Edgars.
Amazing.
And never won. All right. I don't want to win at this point. I want to keep that record going on and on and on. although I was interviewed in Germany some years ago. I was speaking English. My answers to the interviewer were translated. And apparently the German word for nominated is very similar to the German word for won. And so when the article came out, it said, Deaver has, of course, unique to the Edgar Awards, won eight awards. Now, I hadn't. I'd never said I did. Of course, I hadn't. And my thinking is, and I went to journalism school, you know, it's kind of their job to check the facts. Had they run it by me ahead of time, I certainly would have corrected them. But next thing I know, it's in print. And I didn't even know it said that until somebody started, some friends started calling me up and say, congratulations, Jeff. And I said, well, that's fake news of the best sort. Anyway, that award is offered by MWA, and it's very prestigious, and I'm extremely honored to have been nominated that many times. The organization has, as I mentioned, educational programs, and I was very fortunate to be able to teach my commercial writing course at each of the 12 chapters around the country, and it gave us a chance from the national MWA to get to the to get to the grassroots and to see what's going on the ground with writers and kind of get a sense of what's selling. Is it vampire crime fiction? Is it zombie crime fiction? Is it classic, what we call golden age, Agatha Christie, whom you mentioned earlier, Dorothy L. Sayers? Is it the the hot new young authors? We're seeing a huge influx, and I think this is long overdue. Writers of color in the genre, mystery genre, are now coming into their own and being published much more regularly. And so it was very helpful for me not only to get out and see the individuals who are, in fact, creating the current fiction that we have right now, but to kind of give me some input about what readers want and what the audience is like at the moment.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk about your latest.
Anyway, Hunting Time. Okay, it's a Coulter Shaw novel, and it is the fourth Coulter Shaw novel featuring my character, who is an itinerant reward seeker. People say, well, is that a job that one could sign up for? Because it sounds kind of cool. You travel around the country, you look for missing people for whom there's been an award posted. A police, prison officials post these awards too. You've probably seen them in the news. $100,000 to track down this fugitive. And it's not a real job. I made it up. Because it seemed like a perfect way to get a character in different parts of the country, and I love writing regional stories and novels, and give him something to do, crime-wise. And so the first three books were what I call the Coulter Shaw Genesis story. We meet him, we get to know him. The three novels appearing a year apart actually occur only about 15 minutes later than the one just prior to it. And there are a series of crimes involved. Coulter Shaw is tracking down rewards, but he's also trying to get to the bottom of a mystery involving his father's death. And because so many of my books involve twists and turns and surprises, I don't want to give too much away. But suffice it to say that the Ashton Shaw, Coulter's father, met his demise under very curious circumstances, and Coulter can't quite let go what happened or what might have happened. And so not only does each of the three books, The Never Game, The Goodbye Man, and The Final Twist, involve his tracking down rewards, but there's a through line of his getting closer and closer to the answer of what happened to his father. And as I love it in I was going to say crime fiction, frankly, in all fiction, how that theme interweaves with the rewards. And, you know, nothing is really completely standalone in my books. I love the interplay between the different plots and subplots. But, okay, now we've got that story taken care of. And again, I don't dare explain how it was resolved because I want your listeners to go out and buy my next book, but so and the prior ones as well. So suffice it to say that I took care of that. And now Coulter is kind of down to the reward business as a full-time job. He's got his family taken care of. Now he's moving on. And the book, the latest, Hunting Time, is very typical of a Deaver book. It takes place over a short period of time. It has lots of internal reversals. And by internal reversal, I mean, for instance, we'll come to the end of chapter 7, and we'll see that the hero, Coulter Shaw, has picked up a sidekick who we think is a very interesting kind of person. And this is a hypothetical. This does not actually occur in the book. But he's picked up a sidekick, very interesting, sympathetic character. We like him or her a lot. And then at the end of chapter 7, we realize, but Coulter does not, that this is actually the sidekick of the villain. And he's been a plant to get to work his way into Coulter Shaw's plan. Well, those are internal reversals. There's some what I would call esoteric information, things that I, as an author, like to research, and I think readers like to learn about. In my book featuring Coulter, The Goodbye Man, for instance, that was set in a cult. A religious cult. I'm sure your listeners are very familiar with these things. And so I did a lot of research into cults. The first in the series, The Never Game, which we can talk about, this is going to be a CBS TV series airing next year. That's set in the world of Silicon Valley and involves a computer game gone bad. Hunting Time starts with a very interesting phenomenon I didn't know about, miniature nuclear reactors. Coulter Shaw has been asked to find out what happened to a very critical part of what's called a pocket nuclear reactor. Now, these things you would not put in your backyard, although one could. They only weigh 60 tons, which is more than I could pick up, but it's compared with the, say, Three Mile Island or the bigger reactors, it's pretty tiny. And some people feel this is the face of the new nuclear. Whether you think it's green or not, certainly we are turning our eyes toward nuclear energy as an alternative to oil and gas. And anyway, the part goes missing, and Coulter gets involved in the in tracking this thing down. Well, of course, in a Deaver book, you know, nothing is what it seems to be, and so. Well, guess what? He solves that crime in chapter 3. Well, there has to be a little more than that. And so naturally, we learn that the designer of the reactor, a woman, a single mom, and her teenage daughter have gone missing. And they haven't been kidnapped, but they're fleeing from a whole host of people. One is her psychotic ex-husband, who has been released from prison earlier than expected. Another are these two very creepy fellows who are up to no good, but we don't quite know what. And the other is an industrialist who believes that she may have some whistleblowing secrets on him. And then on top of all this, she thinks that Coulter Shaw is in league with any one of them, or maybe all of them. And so she's fleeing through the wilderness. Coulter takes off after her to try to save her and her daughter. And the story just goes from there. It takes place, again, typically Deaver, over a couple of days. It has these internal reversals I mentioned, a lot of esoteric information about these computers and about survival in the woods, because Coulter Shaw's history is that of a survivalist, and not the wacky kind of survivalist we hear about in the news sometimes. He's simply someone who knows how to survive in the wilderness, in you know, blizzards and the desert and so forth. He's very self-sufficient. One of his prized possessions is the Ralph Waldo Emerson essay, Self-Reliance. And he believes that people should be reliant upon themselves first and foremost when they when they achieve that goal, then they can help others. So he's, you know, gets a bit of philosophy in there. Well, we have some of that survivalism, and then there's a surprise ending. And yes, following that, there's a surprise ending. And after that, there is another surprise, surprise ending, because I love my surprise endings. So that in a nutshell is Hunting Time. And I don't know if that's going to figure in the series, because The Never Game was that's the title of the CBS series, starring Justin Hartley as Coulter Shaw, by the way, the great actor from This Is Us. I don't know whether they're going to make that, The Never Game, an entire season, or whether they're going to pick and choose from the different books. So we'll have to see what happens. You probably will know about it before I do, because I'll be in a dark room writing my books, and I don't pay much attention to media. And so, right. Kelton, if you find out, just drop me a line and let me know what's going on with that.
Okay. I'll keep my ears to the ground on that one. We'll be paying close attention to that. Congrats on the latest, of course. And, you know, I mean, it seems like you're jumping between the Lincoln Rhyme series still and the Coulter Shaw series. How are you kind of breaking up the writing and the research piece? Because I know you have a very specific kind of routine that you go through each year, and on a yearly basis. Sure. Are you picking and choosing? Do you have different desks where you go to in the house, like James Cameron did when he was writing Terminator?
Oh, is that right? I didn't know that. I actually respect him a lot.
It could be apocrypha, but I'm pretty sure that he said in an interview once that he had two different desks, one, and he would play different music at each one while he was writing the different scripts. And I think, you know, it could have been Terminator and Aliens, or Alien, excuse me, or Terminator and The Abyss. I can't remember. But between the two different types of scripts, he was jumping back and forth, kind of trying to change his neurobiology.
Well, I mean,
I know
for a fact, when he was writing The Abyss, he listened to the soundtrack for Little Mermaid. Making that up, with all respect, Jim, if you're listening. I make up stuff for a living, so no I don't. And the great author, Nobel winner Saul Bellow, literary writer, said when someone asked him a question about what type of pencil he used when writing, he said, well, you know what, whatever's there. I think a writer should not pay too much attention to his shoelaces. And Bellow was just great. He had these metaphorical expressions, meaning that, you know, no rituals. I don't have any rituals. I write wherever I need to write. I have an office. At the moment, I'm in my kitchen, where I also work frequently at the island. My dogs are in the office because it's kind of soundproofed, and they tend to bark during interviews because I'm neglecting them. But no, I work anywhere, and I'll jump between books. The one thing I can't do is outline two books at once, because, and as we talked last time, and if you're, you know, your listeners are interested, I think we talked a fair amount about technique last time. They can jump to that link and listen to what I feel about putting a book together. So I outline 8 months of outlining a book and doing the research at the same time. And then when that's done, I sit down and write the book very quickly to generate the prose. Well, I can't generate prose for two books at the same time because they jump back and forth. The ideas and the characters jump back and forth. But I can outline a book while I'm writing the prose for the current one. And I do a book a year. You know, we authors are up against some very formidable creative competition out there. Yes, of course, Angry Birds and Candy Crush and Stardew Valley, the video games that who doesn't love to play when you get tired of writing, but also streaming TV. It's just wonderful things are on the many platforms. I watch them myself and love them, but I do feel that a book is the more emotionally satisfying creative form of storytelling, because once you've seen, you know, Breaking Bad four times, as I have, I think it's absolutely brilliant. We kind of walk away from the world of Walter White. But if you read a book, we as readers participate in the storytelling, and it becomes richer for us, and the emotional engagement is deeper. And so I, while I love sitting down with a remote control like everybody else, I still feel that books are, I guess I'll use the word better. Better if your goal is to create a an intense emotional connection between a story and the reader, then a book is the place to go, a book or short story. And so I've been working very hard on getting my material out to the audience. I mean, could I retire now? Yeah, I could, but I have no desire to. I want to keep producing a book in a, having mentioned the streaming world, a book that is maybe a little closer to the concept of streaming. Still a book, you still read it, you still participate as a reader with the author's story. But what I've done is change the form a bit. And in fact, I call it a streaming style, so that when somebody sits down with a new Deaver book, and this goes back four or five books now, since the streaming world has really started to take off. And very briefly, I'll describe it. The books are shorter. I used to write 130,000 words. Now they're like 100,000 words. I have shorter chapters, shorter paragraphs, more dialogue, a la screenplay. There's just as much emotional engagement among characters. It's not all shoot 'em up, not all car chases, certainly. There are relationships that I think are just as deep. But I want the story to move more quickly. I work very hard to make sure you will never have to look up a word in a Deaver book in the dictionary. And earlier, some of my books going back 10, 15 years, I was a little more arrogant about it. I think my thinking was, well, you know what? This is a great phrase. Okay, that's an odd word. But you know what? They're going to have to look it up. Or they're going to have to just figure out what it means. Well, I don't think so. I think it's our job as authors to come to the reader, to give them what they want, what will make them enjoyable. Now, is somebody going to say, oh, I can watch The Queen's Gambit tonight or pick up this Deaver book? No, that's not going to happen. But what I hope will happen is if they pick up a Deaver book, they'll say, you know what? I read this thing in a day, and I didn't have to plod my way through it as I have to do in some fiction. It's kind of, maybe they won't even make the connection that it's kind of like watching, The White Lotus or Veep, without the comedy, of course. I try to get a few laughs in my book, but anyway, my thinking is, okay, maybe they'll think, it's kind of like that. And I enjoy it. And I'm going to look for another one. And maybe if I like his books, I'll pick up some other authors too.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah. I mean, I love listening to you talk about really just, getting the pages, getting the story, how you use questions and conflicts to drive the plot, of course. And then, this idea of, as you're maturing and as you're becoming a more adept author in the genre, shorter chapters, shorter paragraphs, more dialogue, because it seems to drive these stories with a pace that, as you put it, you're working on a shorter time period, these missions that are short time periods and compressed timelines, I should say. Mm-hmm. But
exactly.
Yeah, I mean, congrats on the work. The latest, Hunting Time, is book 404 of the Coulter Shaw series and has been called a fleet, irresistible tale by Kirkus. And of course, it's exciting to see this world kind of expand and the mystery deepen, and the bigger and the smaller pieces, obviously, really, really, really nice to see. You had talked about just like the importance of the idea that getting the pages is somewhat subjective. Each writer approaches the desk differently. Each writer is going to have a different style. And that's really what we've learned on this show, I think, over hundreds of interviews, is that each author, every successful author, just does what works for them. No author's the same. Ultimately, you've talked about there not really the idea of writer's block not really being a concrete thing, but the idea of ideal block really being kind of more what writers are struggling with. But we so appreciate your words, your wisdom. I will point, of course, to the original episode and the book, your home base there, jeffreydeaver.com. You know, I could pick your brain all day and I'd love to have you back. I know you've done some video series that are out there in the world on the resource page of your website. And of course, there's a newsletter too that listeners can sign up for over there to keep track of your stuff.
When I first got into this business many years ago, pre-social media, of course, there really was social media, except we called it postcards. And to reach our readers, we would print out, sink. I actually sunk one of my first total advances into my promotion budget. Of course, the publishing company did something, but they can't be expected to have an unlimited budget to support, relatively new readers. So I would, I sunk all the money. That was, the princely sum of like $1,200, but and printed out these wonderful postcards. Spent another $300 or $400 mailing them out on mailing lists I bought, whether they ended up who knows where in trash cans, probably a lot of them. But it was, the social media of the time, and you have to do it. It's, as I also tell my students, this is a business, folks. We're Procter & Gamble. It's a creative product, but you know what? Toothpaste is creative too. They don't, somebody sits down and thinks, what's going to be the best toothpaste I can make? Or why is this car going to be better than another car? That's creative thinking. And we have to do that. And that means we have to sell it as well. And that's why I do the novels. I work hard. I'm writing don't know if anything's going to happen with this, but an original streaming TV series. I can't say anything more about it at this point, but that will be shopped around. I also do short stories. I work with Amazon original stories quite a bit and publish two or three with them because I love short fiction. There isn't much of a market nowadays, but Amazon has done a very good job promoting short fiction. I mean, promoting it as a creative form, and then promoting it as a marketer would promote it. So it's, because that's a market that I identified. And to make a living in this day and age as a writer, you have to, explore and exploit every opportunity.
It's funny because I'll go to this quote from How to Write a Mystery, a handbook by the Mystery Writers of America. Again, congrats on the 180th of the McCavity Agatha and Anthony Awards. Crime doesn't pay enough. I'll drop a link to that fantastic resource because there's some great writers, including yourself. Tess Garrison, who's been on the show, drops some advice about the medical thriller. Of course, you did your piece on outlining. Lee Child did a segment on never outlining, which I think is pretty funny.
It's hilarious, yeah.
Yeah, but hey, thank you again for stopping by. We wish you the best of luck. And what are you working on presently? What novel series are you working on presently?
I'm doing a Lincoln Rhyme at the moment. It will be out in mid-year next year. And then again, a couple, just go to my website. I've got a couple of the Amazon short stories, Amazon short story cycle. I'm doing four short stories that kind of interweave a la Quentin Tarantino, kind of a fun project. But that's about it. And after we speak now, I'm going to free my dogs from their captivity. And after they get treats, all three of us will sit down and they'll help me keep going with that new Lincoln Rhyme book.
I love it. Again, thank you for your words, your wisdom. Come back anytime. And we will let you free those pups.
Okay, Kellen. Thanks so much, as always.
Thanks so much for joining us for this file. And if you're a fan of the show, simply head over to writerfiles.fm for more. That's writerfiles.fm. And scene. We did it. Sorry about the technical wackiness. That was kind of... Do you have to jump off? Is this a hard stop right now for you?
I've got a second or two more. I always enjoy talking with you, Kelton.